Welcome to the Property Business Accelerator Podcast with your host, Mike Frisby. Mike is a well-respected property investor and has built up a high-yielding residential property portfolio across the Southeast since 2006. Mike is well known for his HMO expertise and for specializing in delivering high-end, premium and affordable HMO living spaces. Complex property knowledge, made simple, direct from the property front line with Mike Frisby.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Property Business Accelerator podcast. Today, I'm going to talk all about commercial finance surrounding HMOs. I always find that people aren't sure how to value commercially HMOs, and there's a lot of myths out there. I hear a lot of people talking about getting extreme multiples for their HMOs, i.e. multiples of income. So today I'm going to go through how I get my HMOs commercially valued, and I'm going to explain which lenders work more on a commercial valuation basis than a bricks and mortar basis. But I'm going to start off with the basics. I'm going to really start where we need to start, which is defining what an HMO is. Well, an HMO is a building or part of a building, such as a flat, where two or more households reside, or three or more people reside, where they are sharing basic amenities. So there is something in the HMO that they are sharing. This could be a bathroom, or this could be a kitchen. It could be cooking facilities. The other thing we need to define is what is a household. A household is where partners, like anybody who's married, cohabiting, same-sex couples, or indeed further extended family. So you can have parents, grandparents, grandchildren, sisters, uncles, aunts, nephews, children, half-relatives, all class as a household if you're living together. The other people who could be included in a household, but probably less relevant for an HMO, of course, is your domestic staff or carers, where that is probably more prevalent and in the rental market. But the other area that we really need to focus on is planning permission, because it depends on what class or what planning you have obtained for your HMO as to how it can be valued. So let's start off with what a family house is. A family house is a C3, i.e. the planning class is C3. Now, you can convert a C3 to a C4, which is an HMO, for 3 to 6 people, under permitted development. So you can take any property, start letting it out as an HMO, and it turns into a C4. And that is permitted development, unless the local council has taken away those permitted development rights under its right to do so, called Article 4. So a lot of areas these days have Article 4 for HMOs in their local area. Now, that could be streets, that could be the whole area. So I operate in Portsmouth, and I'm going to use Portsmouth as my example today for HMOs. And the whole of Portsmouth is an area of Article 4. And that means that if I want to create an HMO in that area, I have to apply for planning permission. So if I want to put 6 people into a property, I have to go and get planning permission. That planning permission turns that property into a C4, into a property that is no longer a house, that is no longer often regarded as a bricks and mortar valuation. Why? Because next door can't be suddenly changed into an HMO, and it has some unique value. So what do? Well, we look at it as an income. So there is rent obviously paid to yourselves from that HMO. And what you do is you look at that rent, and it is a multiplier of that rent or a rental yield that gets the valuation, because another investor is going to come along and want to have a look at that HMO and want to see which is the best HMO to buy. And that is often on the rental yield. So therefore, it is the rental yield that is dictating the value of the property rather than the bricks and mortar, because it is no longer a family home. You can get larger HMOs than 6 beds, and these are 7 or more people HMOs, and these are known as sui generis. Now, in every area of the country, if you want to create a 7 bed HMO or bigger, you need to apply for sui generis planning permission. So every property of sui generis nature needs to go through planning, even if it isn't up and running already as an HMO. So now we have two areas where potentially we've had to go through planning. One, sui generis, which would be any sui generis HMO in the country. And two, HMOs of 3 to 6 people, C4s, in areas of Article 4. So both of those types of HMOs are going to be commercially valued. So what's the difference? Well, bricks and mortar is where you look up and down the street, look for properties in similar condition, of similar size, and see what they've been selling for. And that's what a RICS valuer looks at when he's regarding what a value is for bricks and mortar, for residential value, for C3 properties. But for commercial properties like HMOs, they are going to look at what the income is. So what they do is they take the gross rent, then they adjust that rent downwards into what is known as the net adjusted rent. So i.e. they take off the costs of running that property. Those costs don't include finance costs, but they do include bills. Now, obviously, if you have a student property, the students normally pay all the bills. If you have a professional property, the landlord normally pays all the bills. So what you're trying to do is equalize those two out to get the net adjusted rent. So the costs that you take off are gas, electric, water, council tax, those kind of things that equalizes out the net rent, because that is what the HMO is producing in terms of income. So then you work out, well, what yield is operating in my area? What are investors happy to buy this HMO for in this area? Well, that is what the RICS valuer, and that is what your job is to do, is to find out what yield people are happy to buy and sell for. So, you know, HMOs can be anything. In areas like London, the yields are going to be much lower, something like 4-5%. In outside of that, in the south, we're going to get yields closer to 8-9%. Then up north, we're going to get yields of around 10%. Because we're expecting higher yields out of more northern property, and there is going to be probably less capital appreciation up north. Historically, that has been the case. So therefore, you find out what your yield figure is for your area. So if we take an 8% yield, you're then going to divide the net adjusted rent by 0.08, i.e. 8%. So let's run through an example. So if we have an HMO that is producing £30,000 a year in income, and you have £5,000 worth of costs, you're going to have a net adjusted income of £25,000. So you then take that £25,000 and divide it by 0.08. In this instance, therefore, that value of that HMO is going to be around £312,500. Sometimes valuers round it a little bit if you get odd figures, but that is essentially what you're going to get for your valuation commercially for your HMO. Now, not all banks are happy to value an HMO on a commercial basis, but a lot of the challenger banks, what I call the challenger commercial banks, are. So let's have a look at what lenders are going to value you on a bricks and mortar basis. And that's going to be people like Foundation, Precise, Paragon, Kent Reliance, Fleet. They're all going to give you a bricks and mortar valuation. Some of them will give you bricks and mortar plus a little bit extra because they recognize it's an HMO and potentially you've spent quite a bit of money on it and created a higher yielding HMO. So an investor would come along and think, yes, I'm happy to pay a little bit of a premium for that. Therefore, they will give you a bricks and mortar valuation plus a little bit more. But someone like Shawbrooke looks and understands the planning situation and therefore gives you valuations on a commercial basis around that. So if you have an HMO that's not in an area of Article 4, they'll just give you bricks and mortar valuations on it. But if you have an HMO that is in Article 4, they're going to give you a commercial valuation on it, just the way that I described. They've also got a valuation for an HMO that has been modified a lot. Perhaps you put a lot of en suites in, perhaps You've really renovated it and done it to a high standard, and therefore it's generating some really good income. On that basis, they might also give you the bricks and mortar plus works, giving you a slightly higher valuation for your HMO. But the real commercial valuations kick in when you're in an area of Article 4 and have the right planning in place. So in that case, you've got Shawbrook giving you a commercial valuation because you've had got the right planning, you've had to go through planning, and therefore it is a unique building in your area. Also, sui generis, they're going to look at on a commercial basis. So what banks are happy to instruct on a commercial basis? Well, you've got people like Shawbrook, Interbay, Cambridge and Counties, Hampshire Trust Bank, Lloyds. So there's quite a few that will value a property in this way. They'll look at it and they'll go, yes, this is a commercial valuation. What you've got to remember is this is long-term finance, and this is going to be a little bit more expensive than your normal buy-to-let mortgage because it is an HMO, commercially valued mortgage. So if you're in the South, maybe not in inner London, but if you're elsewhere in the country, that is likely to mean that your HMO is going to be valued higher than your bricks and mortar value because of this uniqueness value, because of the income coming out of it. Therefore, it is quite a good way to recycle your cash out of an HMO. So if you buy a rundown property like I do, do it up, put some en-suites in, get the planning permission, rent it all out, get the income coming in, and then get it valued on a commercial basis. Quite often you've uplifted the property, added value, added quite a lot of value that you can then take out a lot of your initial deposit or a lot of your initial deposit and some of the work costs. It's hard to completely recycle all of your money through this, through an HMO in this method, but it is possible. Banks don't really like you to take out more than what you've put in, and they actually quite like it if you leave a little bit in. That is something that they prefer to do, so they will always look at it. The other benefit of commercial finance is that you can do that recycling of your cash quite quickly. There isn't such a thing as a 6-month rule with commercial finance if you've got a story to tell and you're explaining what you're doing. And if they can see that you've done up the property, then you can actually recycle and go on to long-term finance much quicker than you could potentially with a buy-to-let mortgage, where you normally have to wait 6 months from purchase to going on to the new value and move away from the purchase price. So let's take an example of mine where I've done that. I bought a property. It was quite a large property, so I could convert it into a 7-bed HMO. What I do is I take it by stages. So it was a 5-bedroom house with 2 reception rooms, and the plan was I was going to turn some of those reception rooms into lettable rooms as well and keep the communal space. So first of all, I applied for a C3 to a C4 application, wanting 6 bedrooms out of it, and said the 7th room that I was going to use later on as a sui generis. In this case, I used the box room and said it was a study. So I put that application in. That application was then approved. Therefore, I then had a HMO that was a C4. I then started the renovations, knowing that I had planning permission to turn it into a property, into an HMO, and therefore started about going and putting on in my en-suites, decorating it, upgrading it, and making it look attractive and livable for HMO tenants. After I finished that, I started to fill the building, but a little bit of time had passed, so I'd also put in the application for sui generis. I do it in steps because there's not significant difference between a C3 and a C4. So when a planner is looking at that in isolation, because you can have 5 people in a family, having 6 people in an HMO, potentially it means that there isn't a massive material difference. So as long as you meet the transport requirements, so that maybe it's parking requirements, maybe it's bike sheds in your area, and that you can satisfy that, then in my area, if the density is still low, I can convert a C3 to a C4. You do have local councils that maybe have only picked certain streets that they want as Article 4, and density on those streets are probably going to be quite high, and therefore it could be quite hard to get another HMO in that area. That therefore means that it's difficult to create new HMOs in those types of areas. And you'd probably have to go to parts of that borough or that county that aren't Article 4. So I then have an application in for planning permission, quite often with sui generis. Someone from the planning team is going to come out and inspect the property. So they come out and have a look at the property. I'm looking for an extra room. So again, there's not that material difference between a 6-bed HMO and a 7-bed HMO. Therefore, he looks around the property, sees that there's space for an extra room, and on this occasion was happy to grant planning permission for a sui generis. I didn't let out that room until I got the planning permission because I didn't want to breach my planning, because if I breach my planning, I'm probably breaching my lender's condition. While I'm doing all of that, I'm often on short-term finance. So it could be bridging, or Shawbrook do a nice product that is short-term to long-term lending. You should always do major refurbs on a short-term product, on a type of bridging or a product that is designed for that purposes. You shouldn't be doing these kind of works on a buy-to-let mortgage. It's not designed for that. It is designed, a buy-to-let mortgage is designed to buy a property and let it out and do that, not to have significant works going. Yes, short-term finance is more expensive, but that is the correct way of doing it. And that therefore, when you come to refinance, you're not going to get caught out by the lender that you're trying to refinance to. So I always advise people to follow the rules and do that. In the olden days, more people used to do it on a buy-to-let because it was cheaper, and then refinance to something else. I wouldn't recommend doing that, and it's getting harder and harder to do that. So although some mortgage brokers are still happy for you to do that, I myself would say, try and stick to the guidelines and don't breach your mortgage guidelines. I've heard of people who've had their mortgage products pulled right at the last minute because they've got wind of the fact that they're going to do a major refurb on the property, and that's not what the product is designed for. This can even happen between exchange and completion, so you're legally bound to complete, and if you can't, you have to pay forfeiture, and you could potentially lose your deposit and any other costs that have occurred to the seller. So therefore, it is really important that you get this right. So once you've done the full works and you've let it all out, and I've let the seventh bedroom, I look at what the income is. I then net adjust it. That is going to be in the region of around 20% of the gross rent. So you're reducing down the gross rent roughly between 20%. Probably the smallest I've seen recently in terms of net adjustment is around 15%, and the biggest is around 30%. The bigger the property, the bigger I find they net adjust, because they want to keep the yield down, or they want to keep the value down rather, and they have to go off the yield in the area. So therefore, we take that property and we've moved it. So if you want to know the figures that I was working with, where I bought this property for 320,000. I spent, I think, around about 80,000 doing it up. Therefore, I've spent in the region of 400,000 getting this property up and ready. Then by the time you've added some stamp duty, legal costs, finance costs, I'm probably closer to £420,000, maybe £425,000. And then I go and get it revalued. In this instance, I got it revalued at 500,000 because of the income. The income situation on this one meant that I could get it valued at 500,000, which I was very pleased about. And that was probably a net adjusted yield of around 8.5%. And therefore, I could get a mortgage at 75% of that value, which is 375,000. So I've spent about 425,000, got a new mortgage of 375,000. So I've left around about 50,000 in that property, in that deal. But it's cash flowing for me about £2,000 a month. So although I've left £50,000 in there, I'm getting and producing off that hard-earned cash of £50,000, £2,000 a month. So that you can see, as I've had to put in a deposit of around 80,000, spend 80,000 doing it up, I'm going to have about 160 plus finance costs, and more like 180,000 that I needed to cash in, but then I can get probably around 130 back and leave around about 50,000 in. That means I have a great HMO piling out £2,000 a month for eternity, once it's full and I'm running it and operating it efficiently. And that is how you recycle your cash through your HMOs and go again and again and again and build up a portfolio of HMOs. So you, first of all, you need to find the pot of cash for the 180,000 in this instance. And you need to have the capacity to leave 50,000 pounds in. Perhaps you want to work with a joint venture partner, perhaps you want to work with an angel finance, or perhaps you could remortgage your own home and take some money out, or perhaps you have some money in the bank somewhere that can do it, or across your portfolio that you can raise by refinancing because you've had properties for a while that have gone up in value in your portfolio. So that is how you can commercially finance HMOs. I've heard lots of myths around that, you know, up north you can just go and buy a cheap house, do it up as an HMO, and suddenly it's going to be worth twice as much because it's working on the income multiple. Well, if it's not in an area of Article 4, that is not what's going to happen. There aren't lenders out there who's happy to lend. So I'm not quite sure where all these myths came from. But it does mean that I wouldn't be buying properties up north that are ready-made HMOs on these inflated values. Make sure it is in an area of Article 4 if you're buying on a commercial value. And there's nothing wrong with buying on a commercial value because this is the true value of the property and it's going to spew out an income for you in line with that. So hopefully that is shared with you how commercial financing works in HMOs. And if you have any further questions around that, please do get in touch. But please remember, HMOs, commercial financing, is really linked to planning permission. It's really linked to those banks that are happy to lend in this fashion. And it's all linked to with the yield in your area. And note, I haven't talked about multiples of income because essentially valuers don't tend to talk about that. They talk about yields. They talk about net adjusted rents. And that is how you calculate a commercial valuation. Hopefully you found that useful. Please do get in contact with us. If you want to discuss these things further, as we have events around commercial finance, going through some of my examples, talking more in detail of how the banks lend, how they instruct valuations, which is key to getting your house commercially valued and the best value for it.
You've been listening to the Property Business Accelerator Podcast with Mike Frisby. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and at our website, propertybusinessaccelerator.co.uk.